What is a human being? I was going to have you write this on an index card and then share it, but I couldn't find any index cards. Apparently we're out. What is a human being?
A carbon-based organism.
Carbon-based organism. Okay.
Soul,
you're not wrong.
With the soul and reasoning ability.
Soul.
Absolutely.
What did you say?
With the soul anyway. Okay.
And then Joyce.
A creation of God.
A creation of God.
In the image of God.
In the image of God.
The creature God chose above all others.
Okay, so there's a dignity, a God-given dignity to humanity.
We are the intelligent ones and not cats. Yeah.
Okay.
True.
I don't know, Ken would have something to say probably. Pretty complex creature.
Well, a honeybee's complex. It doesn't have anything with our relationship with God and so forth. And that. But the honeybee itself is pretty amazing. Just that minimal amount.
This is... It's interesting that we don't have just a pat ready answer for this question. We have a lot of good answers, but does it kind of feel like we're kind of trying to claw at something that's hard to nail down? So this morning we are continuing in our study of creation and fall. And what we have seen already is that the world and the church are telling two different stories about everything. And I think that it's that difference in story that generates a lot of the tension between the world and the church in the modern American setting. And when I say a story, I'm talking about the big narrative that answers these four questions. Who are we as human beings? What does it mean to be human? Where are we? How do we understand the world around us? What's wrong with the world? And then what is the solution? So we've already looked for several weeks at the where are we question. There we go. We already looked at the where are we question. And we've seen several answers over the last few weeks that we live in a good place. Not a... either or blank slate place. We live in a good place. A place that was created intentionally with purpose and design by the Creator God. The creation is animated, brought to life by God's own life. It's not that you have an inanimate universe that somehow life spontaneously generates from within it. It's that you have life that generates a universe. Life is the default. Even if there is, life doesn't need a host to exist. And then we looked at how the world is described in the Bible as a cosmic temple, so that anywhere you go, you're always in the presence of God. And then last week, we looked at how the end, the telos, the ultimate design, the ideal end of creation is Sabbath. Communion with God, rest, satisfaction, dwelling together with God in this seventh day rest. Today, as you've already seen on the PowerPoint, we're going to move on to the next question, which is the who are we question. So I already had you answer, what is a human being? How are the answers that you gave different from the way that the world might answer those questions? What is a human being?
Animal.
An animal?
I think we consider ourselves to be spirit-filled and filled with possibility, and I'm not sure that the world would see us as spiritual beings.
Okay, so the world may not see us as spiritual beings, spirit-filled beings. There's not much, there is no real category for spirit. I say that. I don't know if that's true, the way that I said it. Because the fastest growing religious demographic is the spiritual but not religious group. I think people do believe in spirit, but it's a very vague, ambiguous word. And I think probably next year we need to do something with digging into what the word spirit means. How is this different? How is our understanding of the human different from the world's understanding of human?
The world would think, and it would be more important to save an animal than to save a baby in the womb.
The world thinks you might as well live and be happy today because you're going to die tomorrow. There's nothing beyond. We're totally physical, not spiritual. That's a little bit like you're talking about. Look, people want to believe there's something beyond that, and sometimes they say they do, but I think overall there's a concern about that. You know? Mm-hmm. They want to believe that, but they can't or they justify it when you say there's no God.
Yeah, so I think maybe the biggest or most fundamental difference we've already named, and that is humans are not just another animal. In the biblical conception of who are we, humans are not an animal. They're something else. When I was a kid, I remember we had to learn about the animal kingdom. We had to learn this taxonomy, a system of categorizing. We learned there were mammals, and there are reptiles, and there's fungus, and there's, right? And I don't remember all of them. There were five. I looked it up this last week, and now there's like 10 or something. I don't understand that. But humans, they go in the mammal category. That's how we think about how the world thinks about animal division and where humans fit. But in the Bible, it's not mammals, reptiles, fungus, and so on. It's land creatures, sky creatures, and sea creatures. And humans, although they live on the land, are distinct from the other land creatures. They're created on the same day as the land creatures in Genesis 1. They're created on day 6. But they're created separately from everything else. There's something about the human that makes us a distinct creature. And what is that?
So,
this is trigger happy this morning. Humans are the image of God. That's my point for the morning. If you get nothing else this morning, that's what I want you to know. Humans are the image of God.
What's that mean?
That is a great question. And you're in luck because we've got 25 more minutes. So to be human is to be a member of this unique type of creature which is created in the image of God, which raises the question, what is the image? So let me share a few things. First of all, image is what humans are. It's what humans are. In the past, image, the word image, or the Latin phrase is imago Dei. I don't know if anyone's ever heard imago Dei. That kind of has made a little bit of a renaissance in the last 20 years. It used to be that image was identified with human intelligence and rationality. That what makes humans, it's like what we did is we looked at humans and we looked at animals and we said, what's the difference? Well, humans have the capacity for reason, far beyond what the next most rational creature is, whatever that is. And so this capacity for reason, intelligence, that's what makes us human. That's what makes us the image of God. Or moral agency. If a dog bites someone, we would say that dog I mean, it's unfortunate, but that dog was being a dog. That's what dogs do. If a human bites someone, we're like, that person has an issue. That person is morally responsible. Right? Humans have moral agency. Or we have the capacity for spirituality or relationship with God. No toucan is in covenant with God. But humans are in covenant with God. It's that capacity for a more developed relationship that sets us apart. That's what people have said for a long time. But the image is not... or what was said is that the image is not something you are, it's something you have. It's a characteristic of humans. It's something that can be possessed in greater degree or lesser degree. The problem with that... Well, what are some problems with that? If you say that what makes humans the image of God is our capacity for reason or morality or whatever, what would be some problems with that? We weren't created...
We weren't created...
With...
They
weren't created with understanding, right? They don't know right from wrong. The whole idea is that they need to learn from God what's right and what's wrong, and instead they seize the opportunity to decide for themselves. But they are created as these kind of moral blank slates. What else? Here's one that hits home for me. If what makes us the image of God is the capacity for intelligence and rationality, what does that say about a person who is so disabled that they're unable to communicate or to process information? Is that person still created in the image of God? See, I want to say that they are created in the image of God, which tells me that maybe we need to rethink the way that we're defining this. And we need to pay attention to what the text is actually doing. So, the word for image is the word tselem. Do I have the... Yeah, I have it spelled there with a T-S. Tselem. Means image. This is a common word for an idol. God tells Israel over and over, don't bow down to a tselem, an idol, an image. For example, 2 Kings 11, all the people of the land went down to the house of Baal and they tore it down, his altars and his tselems, and they broke it in pieces. The word for image regularly refers to an idol, a representative imitation of the deity. And God, the Creator God, made humans as his image, his idol, his living, breathing, flesh and blood idols, his representative imitations. And as such, humans are flesh and blood mediators of his presence. So if you believe in Baal, you go down to the temple of Baal, and there's a little statue of Baal, and you believe that Baal exists up there somewhere, but he exists here. He's uniquely present in this little statue. And when I worship this statue, then the deity up there somewhere sees it, hears it, receives it. Because that statue captures the presence of the God. And what we find in Genesis 1 is the Creator God makes human beings as capturing his presence in some way. Now, how are we doing? Is this new?
So the idol is symbolic of the God, not really the God. I'm just thinking.
It's, yes. I don't know if I'd use the word symbolic, but I'm not sure what word I would use.
Okay, it's representative.
It's representative. It's real. I mean, in the mind of the worshiper, they truly believe that Baal is present in this statue. He's more than this statue. It's not like if you destroy this, then Baal is dead. But he is here. And it's the same way that God has created human beings, a flesh and blood statue, that he is present He's being mediated. These are his representatives, his ambassadors in creation. They're his delegates. If you hurt them, you're tearing down his image.
Could it be close to what you would call defining our nature that is within us? Looks a lot like God, or replicate what God and Moses had in our nature.
Yeah, I think that we are created with a certain way that we're supposed to be.
Right.
And that is to be God-like, to participate in God's own nature. But when we get to the what's wrong part of the class, then we get to see how did that get disrupted? What's the problem?
Satan.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay. So Genesis 1, 26 and 27, and you're welcome to look this up in your own Bible if you like. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." Notice, fish, birds, livestock. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. What do you notice about this?
God said, "Let us make man."
Okay, that pesky first person plural. Yeah, let us. Who is the us? Okay. What else?
Have dominion.
Okay, so being made in the image has something to do with dominion. One other thing I'd point out is the fancy word democratization. In the ancient world, it was believed that the king of Assyria, or the king of Babylon, or the king of wherever, they were the image of God. Like Pharaoh. Pharaoh believes that he is a god. And the Egyptians believe that Pharaoh is a god. He is the image of Ra, the sun god. But normal people, they're not the image of God. Only the king is. But in Genesis 1, every human is the image of God. The image of God has been taken from it, this very elite status, and it's been democratized. It's been given to all people, and not just to men, but to women, male and female. He created them. Because humanity is made in, or humanity is made in his image, all humans are made in his image. It's not just the first two. It's not just Adam and Eve that have the image of God or are the image of God. Every human is. The category as a whole. Okay, so this is what humans are. We are these flesh and blood representatives, ambassadors of God. We somehow bear the presence of God. Like if an ambassador from, Italy shows up here, we consider them like the president of Italy or czar or whatever Italy has, probably a president or prime minister, but we would consider them to be a representative. They're a delegate of the authority that sends them, and so they carry the full weight as far as we're concerned. In the same way, humans to creation carry the full weight and authority of the God who sent them in Genesis 1. So this is what humans are. But then image is also what humans do. Image is a verb. Humans image God. This is an action. You notice how they're being created in the image of God is connected to a variety of other roles, other verbs that describe what they do. So verse 26 says, Again, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion. Apparently, having image, having dominion, same thing, or connected, related some way. And God said, be fruitful, and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion. There are other verbs that are part of what it means to be the image of God. So, to image God well, humans are going to exercise dominion. Who else exercises dominion? What kind of person does that?
A king.
A king has dominion. So, if they're going to have dominion over the fish and the birds and the livestock, they're going to be acting like royalty. Which makes sense if they are bearing the presence and the image of God. What other kinds of people have dominion?
Government, maybe government.
Okay, government figures. The only other kind of person in the Bible that uses or has dominion is a slave master. The word have dominion only appears in just a handful of contexts. The other one is slaves. And then they're not just going to have dominion, they're also going to subdue. What does it mean to subdue creation? Subdue the earth.
Control.
Tame. I think of Indiana Jones with that bullwhip.
Build a dam.
Build a dam. Okay, managing creation.
This is considered the creation mandate. That's kind of what it's generally called. And in the context of its responsibility to care for, I guess I always think about it like a farmer in his field where he cares for the soil because that's what's going to happen, but to care for, to take care of, which would include managing, which would include, cutting out the weeds, what that's worth.
Tending to, like a garden?
Yeah.
Right. So,
responsibility, the concept of responsibility included in all this work you're talking about.
Yeah, at very least, it's included in subdue. Subdue certainly carries response, that humans are now responsible for something. We're actually going to key in on subdue a lot more next week. So I want to step off of that and reserve that for next time. So we've seen God has created humans as his little images, his little representatives who are going to do what he does. And then what he does, or what they do, is they exercise dominion, they subdue, they multiply. If they're supposed to be acting like kings and they're God's representative, that raises the question, how does God act like a king in Genesis 1? What are some things that God does in Genesis 1 that you're like, that's king talk?
Let there be light.
He gives orders. Okay, kings give orders.
He approves.
He makes a judgment about what is good.
He sets a rule. You can eat of all the fruit of all the tree, all the fruit of the garden except for this tree.
Okay. He creates the law. He creates boundaries. Yeah. Kings should care about their kingdom, and we see God certainly cares. He doesn't have to do any of this. He does it because he wants to. He's apparently invested in this.
In other words, a king should care for his kingdom the way God cares for his.
Right. So he subdues the earth. He subdues creation. Remember in Genesis 1 verse 2, the earth was formless and void. And the Spirit of God is hovering over the darkness. Or darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the abyss. And then he says, let there be light. And he begins to separate and to fill. And what he's doing is, in some sense, it's subduing. Well, again, we'll talk more about subduing next week. He pronounces what's good and what's evil. Humans are going to need to know what's good and what's evil, aren't we? If we're going to image God well, if we're going to be his representatives, we need to know what's good and what's not good, correct? Do we do that very well? No, we don't do that very well. And we create life. God creates life, and then be fruitful and multiply, humans create life. That's acting like God in some way. Especially, we're not just creating any kind of life, we're creating human life. All right. If imaging God means acting like him, being his ambassador, going out as his delegate and doing in creation what he would do, then I would suggest that can be done better and it can be done worse. There are better and worse ways of imaging God. Would you all agree with that? I think so. So that raises the question, is there any sort of ideal that we should be striving toward? And I would say yes. Jesus is the image of God. And Jesus is the image of God. He's the ideal. He's the fully functioning human. I was talking to a friend, it's probably been 2 years ago now. We were talking about this very idea. I said, the phrase came up, Jesus is fully human, fully divine. And he said, I don't know that I like that turn of phrase. I'm like, really? Because that's been around for like 1700 years. Do tell why you stand over against that much history. And he said, I think that Jesus was truly human. He really was human, but he's not fully human because he didn't take on our sin. And I said, but when we say Jesus is fully human, what we're saying is that you and I are not fully human. And you could see the lights come on. Like we are subhuman. When we wrong each other, when we use violence against each other, when we cheat, we steal, we lie, we betray, we are acting less than human. That's not what God created us to be. Jesus is the only one who is fully human. He was like, I like that. I'm like, okay, well, good, because the fully human, fully divine thing, I'm kind of committed to that. So, Jesus is... He is what Adam and Eve were supposed to be. He does what they were supposed to do. And just a few examples of this. Colossians 1, he's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Firstborn meaning the one who inherits. And then 1 Corinthians 15, just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. And Romans 8, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. That is, like, what is discipleship about? As we grow, what are we trying to become? More like Jesus. We are being conformed to the image that is Jesus. Jesus is the image. It's like if you go to the Fed where they print the money? The Federal Reserve? Okay, wherever it is they print the money, they will have a little stamp that embosses every dollar bill or every coin, and every coin then carries the image of the original. Jesus is the original, and everybody else is a copy, is the coin rolling off the press. And what we're trying to do is become more and more like the original because we don't do it very well. So Jesus is the image of God. But image isn't just what you are. Image is also what you do. So how does Jesus image God? He does it by serving and by loving. I think in John 14. No, sorry, 13. John 13. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, while the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and he was going back to God, he rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and taking a towel, he tied it around his waist. And you know the rest. Jesus has this moment where he is acutely aware, it's at the front of his brain, who he is, where he comes from, where he's going, that God has given him all things. He knows all of it. He is the image of God. He's doing the Adam and Eve thing. He's here to do what they did. And when he's fully aware of that, what does he do to put that into practice? He grabs a towel and a basin and he serves. What does it mean to image God well? It's apparently going to mean something like loving and serving. Humans are the image of God. Next week, we're going to talk more about what it is humans do, what God has created us to do. And I think I've pretty well got it figured out. That was a joke. Okay. But first, let me just throw up a little bit of possible homework assignments, things you could do over the course of the week to remind you what we've talked about. Maybe you want to write in a journal and think through what's the difference between the world's understanding and the Bible's understanding of what a human being is. Maybe you don't want to keep a journal. Maybe you just want to get a scrap piece of paper and just write it down. Think it out loud, sort of. Or you could find a simple way to serve someone this week and then spend some time reflecting. What does that have to do with being an image bearer? Maybe you want to pull aside somebody in your family, especially if you have children in the house, and discuss what it means to be the image of God. Maybe you're an artist. You want to create a piece of art depicting Jesus imaging God by serving. Or you can use Psalm 8 as a prayer. Let me just read Psalm 8 for us real quick, and we'll do questions for whatever time we have. Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babies and infants, you have established strength because of your foes to still the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than the heavenly beings, and you've crowned him with glory and honor. You've given him dominion over the works of your hands. You've put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. All right. Thoughts? Questions?
One question. In 26, it said, then God said, let us make man in our image. Who's us?
Okay, so who is us? The traditional Christian answer is that this is a reference to the Trinity. It's been buried there from the very beginning. Okay. The other answer that I think is more interesting is God has already created the sun, moon, and stars to govern. The greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to rule the night. So the sun, moon, and stars are, they have some sort of agency. They're going to have dominion. just like God has dominion, and now the humans are going to have dominion. I think that God is speaking to the sun, the moon, and the stars, and calling humans to now do, because this is not a 60-second kind of question. The sun, moon, and stars are thought of all across the ancient Near East as being, in some sense, divine. What Genesis 1 does is says they are creatures created by the one God. And they are given a role. They are to govern. They do have this capacity. But when God makes humans in his image, he's giving them the same kind of task that he's already given to these other creatures. It makes sense to me that he would say, let us make man in the same image that I've already shared with you. But he doesn't use the word image for them. He only uses the word image. That to me is a more interesting way than to think a biblical writer planted the Trinity there and nobody noticed for 1500 years until Jesus showed up. That would be a good conversation for us to have when we have more time, rather than trying to do that one off the cuff. Okay, that was the bell. Next week, we're going to talk about what it means to subdue, the human vocation of subduing. Love you guys.